Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Boot Grill for Rampage Live. I'm Kelly Lyle, CSU beat writer for the Fort Collins, Colorado, and my normal co-host, Matt Stevens, is busy doing some interviews for a story right now and was not able to join us, but we've got Miles Blumhardt filling in. He's one of our coaches at the Colorado, and I'm not sure the exact title beyond that. And then we're joined here by our guest, Mike Newell, former CSU center, played in the NFL, and was inducted just last month into the CSU Sports Hall of Fame. We're coming to you live on Coloradoan.com, as well as AM 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's football station. So anyway, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Well, first of all, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that whole Hall of Fame banquet and experience. I understand that was a pretty fun night for everybody involved. I've been some years, didn't get a chance to make it this year, but tell us a little bit about what that was like for you going into the Hall of Fame at your alma mater.
What I'd say is just that for me, it was really quite amazing. It really kicked off my school, I can tell you, just for a lot of my life. We had this big CSU rally on Thursday, so they knew I was going to be there on Friday. And so they actually surprised me that all 350 kids out in front of the building, and then delayed me inside and surprised me and my folks were there and my family was there. It was just a really cool experience and really an opportunity for our school to have a lot of pride. And one of the teachers, that was a lot of fun, it was really special to me. And then the next day I interviewed with Stan from the video for the CSU football. That was a big experience. And then Coach Ellers called me on Wednesday and asked if I could be an honorary captain for the game and speak to the team. 4:45 on Friday, and I'm like, oh, I can't turn down that opportunity. So I spoke to the team, and on Friday afternoon, that was an amazing experience. I told those guys, as much as anyone that was going on that week, and that weekend, that meant a lot to me. It was a great experience to go, and just really taken aback by the focus, the attention those guys gave me in that room. I mean, I was in the lacrosse center, that auditorium, and I never felt the gaze of 65, 70 people like I did with that group. I mean, they were dialed in, they were listening, they were focused. It was a really good experience to talk, kind of share my thoughts about CSU football and what it meant to me, to that group of players. And then I had to hustle over to the banquet. I was supposed to go to 5 o'clock, and I had a ton of family there. Some teammates I wasn't even aware that was going to be there, which was really special. And Calvin Brandt was there, Greg Pollard, and he was going to be there. Because just some guys that were really special to me and really wanted to be there that night. And obviously, many others that couldn't make it for various reasons. But, I want to be even better than any better because I remember when they first introduced us, I had gotten hours of nervousness. And then they did the little, they did a little video on it. And I went up the stage and I just felt comfortable. And a big part of it was I felt deserving of the honor. And so it was.
Say, you're part of, it's easy sometimes for people to forget just how good those CSU teams you played on, 94 to 98, I guess, is when you were there, and those were remarkable teams that really put Colorado State football on the national map. I don't think most people in the country had any idea where Colorado State was located, what the nickname was, what colors they wore, and all of a sudden, you guys went and got into the top 25, start knocking off top 25 teams. You're on national TV frequently, those Thursday night games, but also on Saturdays. And just, what's that like kind of reliving that when you look around now? And kind of trying to help keep that memory living for, like you said, these current players, current students, fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think I came in at the perfect time. And I think you talk to anybody that was here at that time, and they know things came together just the right way. And it's not common. And the success we had, even in the years we didn't make bowl games, we still had, I think we were 7-5 one year, we were 8-4 another year. We were winning records every year. platform. And, you know, I think I just, I remember at the end of my senior year, when CSU, I remember coming up and watching them play. I went up to about 3 games my senior year, and I watched on TV this fly over the 93, and I just felt like Coach Gooden was going in the right direction. It really made an easy choice to come up here. And it just hit with my retro freshman. My retro freshman year, when we go down to Arizona, we knocked them off, and put it in front of them again. And I remember over there in West Campus, that was a lot of fun that evening. Because I didn't travel, I was redshirted. But, I mean, what a great time to be here. We learned from those guys that year. It was great to be a part of that. The next 4 years, I got to play a lot, which is amazing. I rotated quite a bit that second year, and then started my last 3 years. And it's been amazing. There was a lot of talent, but there were a lot of guys that were willing to work hard and kind of put their, maybe their personal, their personal ambitions aside and for the benefit of the team. And guys were willing to do whatever it took to win. And the best time we had.
Hey, talk to me a little bit about that run at CSU. It's probably maybe the best run ever at CSU. What made it so special? What between the coaches and the players and all of that, but what brought it all together that made you guys so successful?
That's a good question. I think there's got to be a ton of factors involved. You look at the number one thing that happened. I do want to be cultural brilliance. I think he recruited a lot of great players to the school. So when Sonny came in, we had a pretty good crew to work with. But then Sonny was such a great guy, such a likable fella. We also had a lot of guys from in state coming here. I think helped too. I think when you recruit in state, guys have more of a stake in their school. And I know we had some fellas that came in from out of state, you know, they worked the last year or two. And then you see a lot of guys that. That comes from out of state and they end up leaving to play the four or five years. All the guys that came here from those states just kept them around. And I think Coach Rubin just kind of realized what to do. He hired a great staff, had amazing coaches. You look at some of these coaches that just sprinkled around the NFL and the guys he had, you know, top notch programs. And he assembled his staff and it was unbeatable. Recruited great people and good football players. Really, that's what it boils down to, and then you believe in his message. Playing hard, working hard, and doing whatever it takes to win football games. I know if we look at Coach, obviously Coach Rubin, but maybe look at like Coach Lay, you look at Coach Benton, all these guys, Coach Snyder, who's up in Seattle now, the guy's had a heck of a career in Seattle, the Seahawks, and I love that guy. He's a PA the first couple of years, so we have a practice squad with him, and love that guy. And what a career he's had. It's a testament, really, to what Coach Newman has done around here. And still what he means to his players, what he means to all former players. And I think he was the current players that do that. They know what he was doing there.
Mike, so many of these guys, as a kid who grew up in Colorado, was it tough to picture CSU having the kind of success you guys went on to have, given that, you know, you were probably starting high school when CSU won that share of a national title? They were kind of the people around the state that they were the football power. You guys really turned the table on that equation. Did you believe when you committed to Colorado State, when you signed that letter of intent, that that could happen the way it did?
You know, I don't know. I felt like the program was going in the right direction when I started. I do remember going there. Both my parents were Steve graduates. So I remember going to games growing up. And I remember my dad being the one game. I think it was maybe 86. He went to the game. It was CSU versus CU. My dad was just furious after the game because CSU beat Dr. Buff. I think it was up down to Boulder. I think the next year was tough. I remember coming up to U Stadium and watching that game. So those are my first memories of CSU football. And I think, yeah, they played really tough up here in 87 as well. I mean, it was a close game. I think CSU ended up winning that one. But really, growing up, I was more of a CSU fan, to be honest, just because my parents were Legions. And, you know, fun watching the games with them now because we're seeing CSU play. You know, they wear a CU hat and wear a CSU shirt, but deep down they're in for CSU, and it's just fun. I've enjoyed that tournament as well. But as far as that, you know, they're winning the national championship, it was a good time in history for CU. I mean, they had some great football teams. And every year we played in 94-98, they were a good football team. You know, it was could have played some of those games with us in the last few years back then, but we had some tough dealing with those guys. They've always been a competitive football team.
Yeah, I remember that game in Boulder was a big one. I was actually a student reporter for the Colorado Daily covering CU at the time. My wife was a CSU student in the student section at Folsom who had grown up in Boulder, and we still talk about that. That was a real statement kind of game, almost maybe even from a regional and statewide perspective. That was probably more of a statement game than even that win over Arizona in 94, just from what it meant in state and the way people perceived CSU football when they went into Boulder. And you guys didn't just, CSU didn't just win that game, they clobbered. Really dominated, and I think it really changed perceptions. And yet, 4 years after that, is when Colorado won a series of the national championships. So it was a good Colorado team, a good Colorado program, and it was a fun time when both programs were, at the time you were playing, both programs were doing well, top 25 bowl games frequently, and you know, it's been a while since they've gotten to that level. It'd be nice to see that come back, I think.
People have different opinions on
that. I want to see one of them come back, huh?
I love my Rams. It's tough to root for, you know, the Buffaloes. It's tough to root for the Cowboys. It's tough to root for the Falcons. You know, that's just my experience. But I see them lose, I'm not worried about it. So, but I guess as far as the rivalry goes, it'd be nice, you know, that competitive teams that are playing at a high level, not competitive teams that are low. So, I mean, I can appreciate that. Nobody likes to watch that game, especially you and whether you're the winner or loser, it's kind of quite as enjoyable as that could be competitive.
Yeah, I was just thinking back to those first couple of years that they were playing in Denver, and you know, those were sellout crowds, 75,000-76,000 people to watch a college football game in Colorado. There have been years where CSU, CU, and Air Force might all be home on the same day, and I'm not sure they would reach 76,000 combined in recent years. So, I mean, that was a pretty big deal that one game could draw that many people in the state. So that's where I get off. I think, you know, when you get both programs really in their payday, that it was a good thing for everybody, and it was a good thing for college football in the state. We probably got more guys like you to stay in state as opposed to maybe going to some of these out-of-state schools that we're all signing with now.
Absolutely. I mean, I look back, and I've got some different opinions on that. My high school was good as well. I mean, I do truly enjoy the games on campus. And 98, the first year we played that game down at Mile High, that was our turn to have home field advantage over here at U Stadium. And it was my senior year. I remember walking out to pregame and looking up at the stands going, man, we just gave away our home field advantage. Because 96 was unforgettable up at U Stadium. It was a night game, it was on ESPN. And I remember running out of the tunnel, and I felt like I had a fourth of our electricity that was just, you could just feel it in the air. I think we had about 36,000 fans there, maybe half 2,000. And, I mean, we carried the momentum of the close game. They had a really good team. That was one of our down years. We were 7-5. But, you know, I remember the feeling in 96, taking out, coming out of that tunnel, and then in 98, coming out of the tunnel, my ISA was going, man, really? We just give them home field advantage. And I'd like to see that game. I'm looking forward to it in 2019, but it'll be back at U Stadium. 2020, I really hope we don't push that game back to the top high stadium for you. Let's finish it up at our brand new stadium. So I don't think we have any more games in the series after that.
No, they don't. And that's why you can be pretty certain that one probably will be played at CSU Stadium, because they're not going to play each other the next 2 years after that. What used to always happen, and you were a victim of that, is they would sign the contract, and the way CSU made sure CU would re-sign was they'd schedule that last game in Fort Collins, and then they'd give it up to move it to Denver if CU agreed to play them for 10 more years or 6 more years. And that was probably the intent when they wrote it in this contract, too, but now that the series isn't going to continue and there is no extension, odds are pretty good they'll play that game here in Fort Collins. It will be fun. I was at that 96 game. I remember that. That was in the stands, and it was an electric feeling, and for the fans too, not just the players.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I've never felt anything like that before that moment and after. It was just that crowd was on fire, and I think we lost that 14, 48, 34 somewhere right there. And just an unbelievable atmosphere out there, one that I don't think has ever been duplicated. Maybe it has. And now, if you look at some of those other games, maybe 4-1 over the three miles and tore down the goalposts, I'm sure there's been some others in the past. But just the combination of night game, national TV, our fans were ready and willing to step up. It was an incredible atmosphere out in the stadium.
So that begs the question, did CU recruit you, and or who else recruited you other than CSU?
CU sent me a nice letter saying thanks for my things. CSU recruited me. I had offers from Kansas State. I had offers from Washington State. I was supposed to take a trip to Oregon and Northwestern as well. And staying close to home, I thought I'd have an opportunity to play early here. And I don't think I could have made a better decision for my life and my career, my football career. And Coach Lubick made me see Coach Cody, the other one who was involved in my recruitment. And I had some coaches in high school, like high school coach Rocky Woodward, who coached here at CSU and Brady, under Van Tolman. And so he was kind of pushing me in that direction. Another guy, Ty Barrett, was an offensive line, defensive line, and he was my offensive line coach in high school, and he played football here in the league at CSU. So I had a lot of guys and people moving in coach this direction. It really is an easy decision. You know, I went up to Washington State and took a, we had to do a prop job to get to Coleman, Washington, on campus's parking lot. Funny story, I actually, my roommate that weekend at the hotel recruiting weekend was Ryan Leach. And Ryan, we would talk periodically throughout the years. I mean, Ryan's had his struggles, but we had some fun times that weekend. I've got a story to tell. I'll tell you later. But it was, I was shocked that he went there. And there was a guy that was my host, Jason McAdoo. He was a big guy. He was still coaching. He was still working. He was up in Montana for a few years. I think he's in Division I football. And that was a fun trip. But when I compared the side to side with CSU, it felt right.
Could you imagine that now, though? I mean, thinking of a kid at Littleton High School being recruited by K-State, Oregon and Northwestern showing some interest, Washington State, Colorado State, and ending up at CSU. I mean, with the new structure, the Power Five and all, I don't see that happening again.
I can't imagine. I do look back at it from the standpoint of that. How would I even be recruited? I've had this conversation with Coach Ellis. You know, I was coming out of high school at 6'4", about 245. And I think sometimes now we have these cutoffs. You know, if you're at 275 pounds, but I'm in high school, you're not going to recruit you. And I think at some point, I think some people, they overlook some pretty good football players because they don't fit like a mold that they say is going to be a good football player. And I think you can develop some guys into football players. And I was, I remember going up to Washington State, they see me on film, and they called me right after I got the film, and they said, would you come up here for a visit? Mike Price came to the house, he was the coach there then. And basically, they wanted me to come out there just so they could see what my weight was. They said, the way you were playing, you looked like you were probably about 200 pounds. So we wanted to see that you were really 245 pounds. Because I gave them well, and I was, so it was a good experience. I don't know that it would go the same way, the structure of everything now. You know, you look at these other schools, and the recruiting process is completely different, too. I mean, the recruiting guys in sophomore, junior year of high school, where my recruiting really kind of turned on towards the end of my senior year. And then I shut it down early December. I didn't take any other phone calls. I didn't want to listen to anybody else. So it's a whole different process, whole different structure as far as teams go. It's a good point.
I was going to say, though, you made your mind up in it. You shut it down December, but these days, guys are shutting it down in May. I mean, they're making that decision based on what they saw at somebody's spring game. They might visit in the spring, make an official visit, and commit by May and tell everybody else, I'm done, and that's what it is. Obviously, it really has changed, and you wonder what happens about the guy that had a late bloomer, has a great senior year. Is there a scholarship left for a guy like that anymore in college football? And I sometimes wonder if there are. I think that's why you get maybe more guys that come in as JC transfers, and guys that transfer but start out at some small college and come home and come into a D1 and become superstars. And they kind of get closed out sometimes. A Capri Bibbs might be an example. Colorado State got him, but nobody really knew what he was going to do, what he was capable of. He goes out and just has a huge senior year. He's already committed to Colorado State, and he honored his commitment. Fortunately, there were a lot of big-name schools that came and offered him. 500, 700 yard game, whatever it was, some insane game with seven touchdowns in Chicago. And so everybody was going to find out about it. But did you ever have any regrets? I mean, you'd say now, obviously, but at the time, did you kind of wonder, well, if I'd gone to K-State, or if I'd gone to Washington State, I'd have a chance to play in the Rose Bowl, or any of those things?
I was all in from day one. I was all in. There was no question. I didn't have any regrets. I played early. I got some good knowledge from some coaches. Some coaches you wouldn't think. I was an offensive lineman, but I remember Coach Ellers giving me a lot of advice that first year when I was on the, you know, the scout team. Snyder gave me a lot of good advice that year. Dave Magazine, an offensive line coach that first year I was here, at least getting the NFL now. I'm sure, I think he's in Chicago now. And he was with Ben Doe for a number of years, but he's one of the, I started out as a defensive lineman, and I remember coming out to practice. First time they moved an offensive line, I wanted to play a line. He looks at me and goes, "Poof, you're a center." That's what he said to me. So, like he's a magician. What a brilliant move. I mean, I would never saw myself as a center. I always thought I'd be a tackle or a guard at most, a center. Like, you're crazy, but man, what a brilliant move.
This is a new one. I'm getting a texted question from our normal co-host, Matt Stevens, who wants to know if the integrity of a verbal commitment was stronger than it is now. You have a lot of guys now that kind of, I'll commit to Colorado State until something better comes along. Or I'll commit to these guys in case, unless nothing better comes along. But once something better comes along, they jump. Colorado State's lost guys in recent years to, you know, Iowa and some other big 10, big 12 schools with those, Pac 12 schools with those late changes.
And I think maybe that's going both directions too. I think that's a two-way street. I think a lot of schools, they offer scholarships that they put back. Some of these guys, from what I've read, I mean, they get hung out to dry the last day before the signing period to find out, hey, the scholarships aren't there anymore. I mean, I think, so I think really guys have to look out for them, for their best interest at that point in the recruiting process. So I think some of the integrity has been lost, absolutely, but, you know, maybe it's just part of the process of big money in college football, and you know, you see the teams doing it too. You see the university doing it for kids. You see the kids doing it for universities. So, absolutely, I think some of the players have been lost. I mean, I remember Mark Mangino, he was the guy that recruited me from Kansas State, and he was supposed to come out and hang out at the house with me the day after I was getting to CSU. And I told him, don't bother coming over, and he just, he told me a new one on the telephone, and he was really angry with me. And I didn't make it. And I was serious in my commitment to Coach Rubin. I called him that way. I met with him over there, called him in. And, you know, so nowadays, maybe you still meet with that guy. You still listen to him. And maybe you got a better offer coming down the line. So you got
it. Is some of that just, you think, with the push, like you said, the schools are pushing for commitments earlier, too. You know, how many people at 16, 17 years old are mentally capable of making the right decision for that? I mean, I know that's a tough thing. I'm a parent of, you know, an 18 and 21-year-old, and I think my kids are pretty mature, but I'm not sure if somebody's throwing those kinds of offers around at them at 16 and 17 that they would necessarily have made the right choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough decision. I think, you know, especially at that age, I mean, testosterone is kind of running this, you know, in front of the show, and we've got impulse issues probably, you know, we're all been 16, 17-year-old boys and 18-year-old boys, and, you know, it's part of growing up, and, you know, we know a decision-making job really is when you're 30, when you're 35, when you're 40. Hopefully, most guys are making the decision that's what they think is best for them, best for their families, and hopefully the people that are surrounding them, the coaches that are recruiting them, are being honest with them. You know, I don't know that that's the case anymore in any situation, but something to think about.
All right. Well, we have to take a quick break here for about 5 minutes, but we'll be back here in a few minutes. And stick around. If you have any questions for Mike, think of them, and we'll give you a chance to ask them here. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back in a few minutes at ColoradoOne.com and on AM 1310 KFKA Radio. All right, everybody. Welcome back. We're back here, Rampage Live, with Miles Blumhart, my co-host tonight, filling in for Matt Stevens, and former CSU, NFL center, and recent Hall of Fame inductee, Mike Newell. We're coming to you live from the Boot Grill at the corner of Mason and Laurel, right across the street from the CSU campus, and online at coloradoan.com and over the airwaves at AM 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's football station. So thanks, everybody. And I guess to begin with, we were talking some over the break about different things, and one of the things that come to mind, and you touched upon it before, were some of the coaches that you played for that Sonny had, and then those guys have gone on. Just how important are some of those connections with some of those coaches when you're a player trying to come into a college program and work your way up?
I mean, how you get along with your coach makes all the difference. And, you know, I was a guy that always produced pretty much whatever my coach would tell me. Except for maybe my final year in the NFL. He started to think a little bit later. We talked about your maturity level growth up, and then all of a sudden, you know, my final offensive line coach in the NFL was actually, he was the worst coach I had in my entire career, including high school. So, I mean, Ty Barrett could coach him under the table, and he would kill him. And up until that point, I believed everything the coach would tell me. So for me, it wasn't difficult, but those connections are really important because, you know, Dave Maggs would tell me something, and so we need to focus on this year when I was captain of the football. I listened to him, like, we wouldn't call him. I put my focus on those little things that Coach Ellis would tell me to play center here back in the early 80s. And so I would listen to these guys, and I would just soak it up. And, you know, then you talk about Coach Benton coming in the next year, how things line up to do, for a reason, for a purpose. But Coach Benton turned out to be animal of a coach. He's unbelievable. And he knows the fine points of offensive line play. He knows how to motivate you. And he did a heck of a job with me. But, you know, he'd spend the extra time. I remember my second year trying to get some of the concepts of the offense. The offense down at the center was a little difficult at times. He'd spend the extra time with me. And then we talk about Coach Delaney. Coach Delaney was like a grandfather to us all. I love that guy. And what a great career he had. That, you know, I'm so happy for him finishing out as the head coach of Montana. And that was just a really cool deal for him. And so deserving. Such a great guy. I think everybody sees it. And, you know, when you look at a camera straight down with the Oklahoma State, but I don't know how to tell you. And, you know, these guys are all over the place. Some of the guys I played with, too. You know, James Gray had a successful career. But this place is like kind of a, like a following movement for great.
How much of that was just given to Sonny? The people, the kind of the magnetic personality, I guess, that we all know of Sonny Lubick. I mean, he's a guy you want to be around.
I think a lot, I think each one of those guys are going to give Sonny a lot of credit if you ask him that question, without a doubt. But, you know, obviously, it takes your own hard work, it takes your own dedication as well. But, you know, when you have those people that guide you, they're open minded too. I mean, the receivers coach my first 2 years here. I mean, I think Coach Lubick had the same thing. I think I've heard him say it. You know, Coach Lubick kind of changed the way I coach players. And look at that guy's career. He's really national title, couple other places. Had a great season out of Utah as well. So I think Coach Lubick had a lot to do with a lot of people's success, me included. And you can't say that's a lot of the guys. Just how capable he is, I think that's maybe trait number one. And I think it's better than everyone else. It's just people believe in him.
Well, one of the things, because you played for different coaches, different systems, when you got into the NFL especially, I mean, you had probably a little more stability because you were under Coach Lubick your whole time at CSU. But you did. You changed offensive line coaches after a year. You had some other. How are you surprised, or do you think it should be expected that the Rams have had as much trouble maybe adapting to Mike Bobo and this new coaching staff coming off a 10-win season last year to where they're, you know, 4-5 right now and fighting like crazy, hoping to get into a bowl game by winning two of their last three?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good point. I found myself being a little bit more patient with coaching staff. I remember a few years ago, one of my buddies, I think it was Cowboys first year, and he was upset about something. They were quite having a success. He thought they should have. Look at this guy. You can't judge him already. Give him 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 seasons. Let them do their thing. And, you know, just my experience last week with the team and meeting Coach Bobo for the first time last week, I came away really impressed. I think the program took away those dreams. I'm anxious to see what happens the next 2, 3, 4 years. And you know what? They win it 2 of the next 3. They go out with a bowl game. I mean, what better way to go out than that? You know, obviously, you left them on the table earlier in the year. And you brought us in Colorado, Minnesota, some of these games early on in the season. And, you know, when you get that continuity of the staff coming in from the second year, the third year, the fourth year, those are games. I think Coach Vogel's going to be, I think he's the man. I think they're going to be winning those games next season, year 3, year 4.
What are the main things you see that give you that confidence in him? I mean, like you said, you've been around a lot of coaches. You've been around the game. You've been a high school coach yourself. What are the big qualities you see in Mike Bobo that have you feeling that positive about him and the future of the program with him and coach?
I just met him for the first time last Friday, right before that team meeting, and I had my back turned to him, and he said, "Hey, Mike, Bill, how are you doing?" He came back to me. Just, you know, I had a good feeling about him. A little bit of that genuine feeling that you get from like this kind of movement. I heard somebody compare him to like a Brian Schneider as well, so he's just like Brian Schneider. And I think Schneider's a great guy as well. I remember, you know, playing basketball with him when I was playing here at Moby, and just spending time with him as well. And I think it's just, you know, I've had maybe 3 interactions with him. Just good feeling. You know, you walk away from people, sometimes you're like, ooh, and sometimes you're like, man, that's a good guy. And that's how I walk away from him. I don't know if I can think something about it in those little short moments. You know how his team was, when he was spoken to him, and that was unreal. And I'm sure maybe you were somewhat like that. I don't remember, because I was on the other side of the audience as a player, but I was really tremendously impressed by the focus and attention those guys gave. I think that reflects on Coach Bobo and stuff.
Talk a little bit about the offensive line this year. They lost Tyson Brilo, but a lot of them were back. A lot of them had a lot of experience. But I think I would probably give them about a C right now. I don't think they've lived up to where they should be. It could be because of the system. I'm not sure. They commit quite a few penalties. It's not that they're bad, but I don't think they're as good as I would hope they would have been. From an offensive lineman's perspective, tell me, what do you see in that offensive line?
Well, I think, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was Western Richmond, maybe senior year, and that group was maybe in kind of that same position where they were kind of underperforming for a number of years. And then at the end there, I mean, they just had this unbelievable push to finish out, I think, Western's senior year. And they just had this many games in a row where they went from being kind of underperforming out of the line into being this force on the field. And I know Weston was that leader in that group, and he had a lot to do with that. But just to kind of watch that midseason transformation of that group, I think it was about week 3 or week 4 is when it happened. You know, me personally, like I said, I think I'm patient. I'm a pretty patient guy. So guys are making mistakes. I mean, I got called for holding and a number of times. And I called for offsides. The ones in the grass. I lifted up the football. Like Moses said something, I lifted up the football, turned around, and what did he say? Throws the flag, you know? Never did that again. But you learn as you go. And hopefully that's the biggest thing. These guys are learning and they're getting better. Like, work on that footwork and then work on fishing those plays from the standpoint of, you know, whistle to whistle. Make those guys in their bag pay every single point. Physical play. That's what we did when we were an offensive line. I mean, we were relentless. I mean, it was an offensive line. I mean, you know, I got to play next to some really great guys. I always mentioned Cesario, but me and that guy, we get on the double team, and it was just like, look out, how fast can we move this guy out of there and get up to the next level? And, you know, we only ran maybe a handful of plays. I think we had like a 14, 15 zone, outside zone. We had a counter play, and the 30s dropped, and that was just what we did. And nobody could stop it. So if you could just, you know, if you can work on that physical part of the game and correct those mental mistakes, it's a game of mistakes. Football is going to make mistakes. There's no way around it. The nice thing is you got 10 other guys on the field with you at the same time. Maybe somebody catches, you know, and fill in for your mistake. You catch other people, you help them out. And over time, you get that continuity and you improve. So it's hard for me to judge early. I have full confidence the guys are working real hard. I like the way Gergel plays. He's been great. You see him around the pile, doing a little bit of pile control from time to time. got to be smart about that nowadays. You can't get away with what you used to be able to get away with. But he's a fun player to watch. So, you know, I think obviously that's something to work on if you're right. And hopefully it's one of those situations like, you know, this first senior year where all of a sudden they just click and, you know, they're taking
it. How much communication is there? More, is there more now communication on the offensive line? At least it looks like from the stands that you see it, because you can see them talking to each other. That is there more now than there was back in the day?
Sometimes I think it's a different situation where there's a lot of no-huddle stuff and they look at the sideline and see the play and everybody sees the play coming in and the quarterback has a little communication out there. But I think the offensive line is talking about it. I think we would get up there, we'd make those calls right away. They make it, I mean, we always huddle up. We never did a no-huddle message, you know, in the half and it's game stuff like we needed to. So coming out of the huddle, we all have an idea what the calls are going to be. Maybe already making calls to go from the line of scrimmage, already called out the mic, maybe you're seeing it. I know they do a lot of pointing now, where we don't, you probably didn't do that like that, just call the number of the mic on the back of, you know, or incorporate that right into the call. So I think there is more communication going on now than what there used to be. It appears to know that the offenses are more complex. So.
Well, one of the things you were talking about how that line kind of developed under Weston. One of the things about this group is really Sam Carlson's the only senior. I mean, that's and Kevin O'Brien, who plays some at center, he's not the starter, he didn't start at the beginning. He's kind of the first sub in, and they still play him in a regular rotation. But otherwise, the rest of those guys are all back. Some of them for a couple of years, and there's some sophomores out there. Fred Zerbois is a junior, Nate Callender is a junior, but he's got some guys that are sophomores out there. Jake Bennett, Zach Goldich, Trey Moxley is a Richmond freshman, maybe a sophomore, I think, on Moxley, but Colby Meeks is a true freshman. I mean, you've got some young guys. How much can it help that line to kind of grow up together? I mean, it seems like that's kind of what that line you were talking about with Weston Richmond did. They sort of progressed together through some pretty rough times in the program, but, boy, that last year they were pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those situations you hope it happens sooner rather than later. Because you don't want to have mediocrity for a number of years, and then all of a sudden you're good for 1 year. Because then, you know, when you get that, the guys playing, you know, the way they should, the offensive line can see if he should play. You know, I think then the younger guys are going to feed off that. They're going to see it. They're going to understand how you're supposed to play a game of football. I think that's what we did. I mean, we had good guys, good players that we could look up to. And then after we left, I know, you know, they could look at those films and they could see how we played. And we kind of set a tone. And this is, and those guys that were there after I left, I mean, you look at those guys like David Killen, Blake Isaiah, and Tim Stuber. I mean, they continue that tradition. And they had Morgan Pierce, Eric Pierce. You look at all those guys. And they had some phenomenal offensive linemen after we left. And you hope just that development happens sooner rather than later. And then they can capitalize it for a longer period of time.
One of the things that I would think, you know, you guys talk about Sonny Lubick teams, really that physical play that we wanted to wear teams down and just make them know they play the football game, win or lose. I know Sonny used to talk about that. Mike Bobo's kind of said that's his philosophy, too. He wants to be a power football team that's going to run the ball at will. They're going to impose their will on you with that run game, wear you down. They're going to play violent on defense. And they're just going to, you know, that type of physical team that win or lose, you're going to know you're in for a fight. It's been interesting, even some of the teams that have beaten them pretty handily this year, like Boise State and San Diego State, you hear the comments from those players, and they felt like it was a real physical game, even though they may have won by a couple touchdowns. Do you see that developing more? And if so, is that kind of an exciting thing to see that maybe they are getting back to what you guys had going in the mid-90s?
Yeah, I think obviously it's a great thing if you can get back there. You know, there's something to be said. I think I told you we had about maybe 3, 4, 5 running plays. And it didn't matter. I mean, you knew if you were getting 4, 5, 6 yards in the first quarter, you were getting, these guys are going to be running down to the fourth and trying to avoid you. And then you start seeing those safeties have to make a lot of plays. And all of a sudden you start to see them, man, I'm not liking the safety so much. So they start making their way away from trying to figure out a way not to make a tackle. And so if you can get to that point, I think it does make a statement. And I remember, you know, in the Holiday Bowl, we played Missouri, and we're on a boat, and Cesario would always get his mouth running. And there was a handful of guys at both teams that were just top of the line of trash on the just like a big, both two-team function on the King Rock in San Diego. And it got out of control. People were yelling back and forth. We had to hold the guys back. But I remember just being furious on the boat and just angry. And I wasn't one of the guys talking. I didn't talk much. But I remember getting out on the field and playing that first series. And just, as an offensive line, we wanted their backs. And we didn't stop. I mean, I think we had like a 15-point drive. We drove down the field, scored a touchdown. I remember coming off the field at the end of it going, breathing so heavily and so hard, how am I going to play the rest of the game? And I remember being on top of a guy that was talking trash on the boat. I had knocked him down, got a pancake block. And I was just, I had him straddled, and it just kept on punching. And you can see it on video. And I've got a good friend of mine. His name is Brian Feinberger. I played in the NFL with him. A couple different teams. He was just at my house a couple months ago. He was in St. Louis area. And he played for Purdue. And we watched the game together. We were just having a great time watching. You know, he was pointing out stuff he was doing. And all watched this player play a good game here. And, you know, it was a good time. But just that physical, if you can get that tone set, you know, to take it a long way. I really believe in it. So that's good news that this team, even the team that we're losing against this game. But it's good. That's good to hear.
I know everybody has different opinions about what the Rams showed Saturday at Wyoming. I know Miles has suggested that Wyoming might be one of the worst teams in college football, so not to make too much of that win. At the same time, you know, there were some things that had to be pretty positive signs, I think, for Colorado State that they showed in that game. No matter who they were playing, there were some good things that came out of that. What were your thoughts about that game, Mike, and what you saw from what they did?
The strong start. They had a great start. You know, if you can start the first quarter like that, I think that was a huge plus. That was with somebody else coming home from the soccer game for one of my kids. And I was really impressed with that part of it, that aspect of the game. Now you want to see you take the next level, just go, you know, go for the throw, so to speak. You know, I think we're up 26-0 pretty early in the game. Let's just make it, you know, 44-0. Let's make it, you know, 48-0 instead of keeping it. This one, it's just a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, Mike Bobo took a little blame for that this week. He said that, we got up early and all that. And he said, given what had happened in that San Diego State game, when it turned so quickly from a 10-10 game to getting out of control to where the Rams lose 41-17, he goes, yeah, I got very conservative. There was no doubt. I just wanted to make sure we won that game. Anything it took to win, yes, there were a lot of things we probably could have done to have put some more points on the board in the second half. They got a lot of penalties in the second half that took away a few things, but I think the play calling did become very much a, you know what, we're up 26-0. There's no reason to blow this. Let's just play football and make sure we get the win, because this game really needed that win.
You know, I think that the interception that Nick Stevens threw in the end zone, when Kevon Cartwright double teamed, there was no way. I think that's when Bobo said, you know what, now I'm going to shut her down and we're just going to win this game. I think Wyoming is the worst Division I football team, seriously, I've ever seen. But CSU handled their business up there. They did what they needed to do. Now I need to ask you, Mike, how do you see the Rams finishing out? I mean, they have three teams. All winnable games. New Mexico may be a little tougher than you would think on the road. But now what do you think about the Rams going in? They play UNLV at home, New Mexico on the road, and Fresno State on the road. What do you see as the end of season here for the Rams?
Clearly, I mean, you want to get that sixth win. You want to get that sixth win mark. Give yourself an opportunity to play one more game and get those extra practices in. And don't see for next year when you're recruiting your talent recruits and you're playing the bowl game. I think that would go a long way, obviously. So you got to get two out of three. I think the Mexico, they surprised me a couple of games. They won this year. I was surprised. That's a tough game of the weekend at home. Obviously, this weekend's game against UNLV is a must win, and you've got it at home. Last final home game of the year, senior night. So, and then you look to that last one with Fresno. Fresno historically has been a tough place to play. I think they're having a down year. So I think it's a winnable game as well. So hopefully, you know, we'll start getting close to the peak. You know, I'm encouraged, like I said, with the Wyoming starting out there. And then hopefully we can continue some of that momentum as we play off 3 weeks. And hopefully put off 3 or 7 games and then get there with a 4 game. I think that's pretty good.
we've come to that time in the show every week where it's time to make predictions for this week's game against UNLV. And we'll put Miles on the spot since he's kind of a newbie, you know, tonight. So we'll let Miles pick first.
31-10 Rams. I think the Rams really come out. They did show me some things. I'm still concerned about penalties and turnovers, but I really think they're going to have maybe their best performance of the year. 31-10 Rams.
Go ahead, Mike.
Going to get a little extra time. I always take my Rams, no matter what. Just the way I am.
I don't think we've had a guest pick against the Rams yet. So
I haven't ever picked against the Rams ever. So I'm going to go. You know, I think that's what's going to be. I think that 31-10. You know, maybe you're looking at that. You know, 30-17 somewhere in there. And hopefully, you get off that quick start and really capitalize on quick start.
You grabbed my exact score that was in my head. 38-17 is Rams is what I was thinking. I think that they're going to open things up a little more offensively, even if they get that fast start, because I think Mike Bobo realizes that there may have almost been a little losing some of that momentum they gained in the first half by not finishing strong, and he doesn't want to see that, especially for a team that needs to keep building down the stretch here. It's, you know, yes, it's one game at a time, you win one game at a time, but what they do in this game could play a significant role in what happens when they go down to New Mexico a week later. So I think they want to finish a team and prove that they can not just get that fast start, but finish strong and really put a team away. And I think this is going to be the week they do that. So we still got a minute or two here, but we wrapped up a little early on that part. We don't have a huge audience here, and nobody seemed to have any questions for Mike Newell. But oh wait, we do have one. Okay.
Okay, so the question was, Mike, when your son gets to that age when he might be recruited, what are you going to say to him?
Well, you know, I think the question I get more often than anything is, I'm going to educate you to make your son play football. You know, that's the number one question. My folks say that when you play football, you're going to high school. I played soccer until eighth grade. I played basketball all the way through high school. Couldn't wait to play football. My dad said, you wouldn't get to coach in the league if you did it. And so, thank him every year. He held strong and said no every year. So, when I played, I started playing football. It was a good time to start. I played football every day at the school with my buddies throwing the ball with me. So, I learned some of the game, catching and stuff like that. You know, I never ended up being a receiver type, but would I let my son play football in high school? I would. You know, there's just something about this world, like the, you know, the teamwork piece of it, and then just this kind of auditorial kind of, you know, you learn a lot down in the trenches. When you kind of go out to your knees, like you are in football quite a bit of time, you learn a lot about yourself at that point. So I think it's a valuable team sport. As far as where he goes to school, I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard to get to this. I mean, it's tough to get to this level, you know. And whatever my sons do, I'll be proud of them no matter what. If they get an opportunity to do something like this, run with it. Go with your heart. I'll be there. I'll help you out. I would support you. But that's kind of my stance on it. I'd love for them to go see if you really would. Love my daughter. It'd be awesome for her to play some sport up here. They do love sports. All three of my kiddos. So you never know. But realistically, I know how tough it is to get to this point. And I don't have unrealistic expectations for them. I just don't. Life has funny turns, and a lot of things have to line up just right to get to the point of career playing Division I sports.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for us here at Rampage Live. Join us again next week when our guest is Nate Kwame, former CSU linebacker, Windsor High School standout, and a guy Mike knows well. Mike actually graciously agreed to swap a date so we could get Nate on this week. Or Nate on next week, so Mike pushed his up a week for us. We'll be here again at 7 o'clock Tuesday night at the Boot Grill, Laurel and Mason. Also on ColoradoOne.com and on the radio at KFKA 1310 AM.